Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Weiner. Thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And as always, I have a question for you. Are you the kind of person that really needs to be proven right? Is it hard to let things go? In today's podcast and post, we continue our series, Rediscovering the Sermon on the Mount, as we take a closer look at the meaning behind taking an oath. We take oaths every day in court or when we get married or certain kinds of jobs. And it seems that oaths and keeping promises are integral to the truth and to a society seeking to avoid corruption. But what if oath-taking has a dark side that remains invisible to us until it's almost too late? Join me now as we see beyond oath-taking and explore how it takes away our freedom and what the alternative might be. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to yet another episode. Beyond Everything Radio. I'm so glad that you're here. My name is Kevin Weiner. I am serving the world as an author, uncoach, and online pastor. So glad to have you with me. Welcome to the program, especially if it's your first time. You're tuning in. You're just getting your bearings. I hope that you are ready to go a little deeper, to think a little bit more. I hope you're willing to ask yourself the hard questions. Don't just knee-jerk react. Don't knee-jerk react to what I say. Don't dismiss it offhand. See if something I say can't be vetted, thought about, considered, contemplated. Wear it for a while and see if it's not transformative in your life. That is what we do here on this program. It's what we do on the newsletter, the blog, all this stuff. I do not give you a religion. I do not give you a framework. I let you find your own space. Why? Because we're told that, especially by the Apostle Paul in Romans 14, that one's faith should be between themselves and God. And so that's where I like to leave it, between you and God. But I like to teach the Bible. But since I'm an online pastor, I do not teach it from the same perspective that you might be used to, what I call FUBU, for us, by us, which means that almost every time you've ever heard someone teach the Bible, they have basically tried to convince you of a religion. They've tried to invite you into some framework. They've tried to get you to give your life away to Jesus or to God or to something. And what I'm doing is different. I'm teaching the scripture from the way that it was taught, because it was never, ever intended to become an alternative religion. These are the words of Jesus. These are the words of the early century church, and they were not an alternative new religion. These are words of liberation that free you from not just religion. They free you from all kinds of institutional powers and frameworks that exist in our life. So that's what we're doing here. We're breaking it down. To walk with us, you're going to probably have to deconstruct some of the ideas that you have. And that's a little scary. It's a little intimidating. I get it. I understand. Please stick with it, as many of these listeners have, and watch what happened. Today we are doing podcast number 100. In 95, fast approaching our 200th episode. So our topic today, as we are continuing to the Sermon on the Mount, is we're looking at oath-taking, okay? And so the title today of podcast number 195 is I Solemnly Swear. That's right, I Solemnly Swear. And of course, that's the title, right? I mean, we all take oaths all the time, and oath-taking is a big deal to all of us, right? It's only a big deal when, like, a politician or a public figure swore an oath, and then they violated it, and it, you know, upset half of the world somehow. That's when oath-taking seems to matter. When we make a promise, hey, yeah, we're going to get together, and then you just break the plans or we don't stick to it. I mean, taking an oath today is usually similar to saying maybe, right? So the next few sections of this exploration of the Sermon on the Mount go together, just like the last three sections did. And this one's going to be a little harder to kind of understand. Oath-taking, like I was alluding to in this introduction, it's not really something that we think about every day, right? Unless it hits the mainline news and some politician or somebody does something, we're not really thinking about oath taking. And we don't think about it in the way that we might need to. So this section is going to go with the upcoming sections on retribution and enemies. But this is an important part because these three sections explain the Beatitude, which refers to the pure in heart, right? Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. That was Matthew 5:6. And what does that mean? Well, we know in our world, we think of heart, we think of emotional center of our lives. But in the mind of the listener at this time, the cardia, the heart, was really the mind. It was understood as the overarching worldview. It's not an emotional center. It's really your worldview, your mindset, the way you think, the way you see things. That's your mind, right? And that is what we have to access when we think about oath-taking. So don't get derailed if this introduction seems like it's a little belabored or it's kind of hard to put a framework around it. That's because I'm trying to help us see the larger narrative that's emerging in the greater story here, the greater sermon, and not so much just kind of trying to create some position paper on taking an oath. Because taking an oath means a number of things. You know, it's the absence of, in the early days, they had no credit bureau, right? They couldn't check to see how, whether or not you're going to pay back your debt or how truthful you were to your word. So borrowers would have to make a vow. And they were legally binding, right? When you sign your name on the credit card slip, that's actually a vow, a contract, an oath. But this isn't really the main idea, right? Making an oath was a way that the ego, the pride, that people would kind of up the ante of one's certainty. It was a way of really puffing yourself up to make yourself look better than you are, to make yourself look more believable. It's all about being proven right, right? So it's like saying, I swear on my mother's grave, right? Well, is that more believable than if you, I swear it's true. I swear on my mother's grave it's true, right? You see the difference? When you make an oath, and this is how it was happening back then, they would kind of up the ante. And in Matthew 23, verses 16 through 22, Jesus is really interacting with the religious people at the time who are swearing by the altar and then swearing by the offering that was on the altar and swearing by the temple. And he's saying, you guys, get over it. Right. The whole point is that if you swore by the offering on the temple, you were really, really serious. But if you just swore by the temple, you were just kind of serious. That's crazy. Right. It just kind of creates this whole step approach. Right. Well, how seriously do I take this guy? It was kind of a credit bureau of the sort, I guess, in terms of one's word. And, your credit ranking is pretty low. Unless you swear by these three things, then it's much higher. Okay? You see how it's all about our need to be proven right? How many people do you know that just always have to be right? What about you? Do you always have to be right? Or are you kind of humble? Are you a student, a learner, a disciple, as the Bible calls it, where you're confident that you're not always right? You have a pretty good idea, but you're always willing to learn more. Is that you? That's a better disposition, isn't it, than the person who's certain? Certainty kills humility, right? What if you have to look good in front of others all the time? Can you relate to that? If you can, then oath-taking is something that we can relate to in our modern world too. So we can't just blow off this section of the scripture, of the sermon, just because it's not that interesting. Or at least it's not that interesting at first. But when I get into this, trust me, this is going to start triggering some serious existential questions if I've done my homework. Okay? Taking an oath means almost nothing today. Sure, we all rail against politicians or doctors, lawyers, priests, teachers who swear to uphold the law or fulfill some obligation, but we don't really think twice about bankruptcy anymore. And divorce, canceling our plans, like I said earlier, or making empty promises, we do this all the time. We We make promises to ourselves. Hey, I am going to get in shape this year. I am going to quit this habit, smoking, chewing, cussing, whatever it is. I'm going to get out of debt. I'm going to stick to a budget for once and for all. And year after year, we just fail. We totally break our promises to ourselves, to our family members, to people around us. And so in our world, yes really means maybe or probably not. Oaths don't have cash value, and it doesn't even matter if you stack up the things that you're swearing on anymore. Most of us don't believe we're going to follow through on it anyway. And this is because we're actually over-oathed, over-identified, and imprisoned because of our oath-taking. You see that? This isn't because we've forgotten what it means to fulfill an oath, a duty, an obligation. This is because we're actually inundated with way too many commitments. See, the true meaning, as we've been seeing through the sermon, right? Jesus' whole point is to come and bring true meaning. So the method that he does that is he says, well, you've heard it say this thing, like he refers to a law from, you know, Jewish history. And then he says, but I say to you, and he throws down something slightly different, something nuanced, something we can actually learn and gain, get our heads around, okay? True meaning when it comes to oath-taking is going to elude us. We are not going to figure this out. No matter how long I belabor this, you're not going to figure it out until we access what is happening deep inside our cardia, our worldview, our mindset, our thinking. Right? You'll never live better than you think. And if your thinking just can't pick up the subtlety, then you're never going to catch the true meaning. But I think you can. And that's why I'm doing all I can to set it up for you. So let's hear these words that Jesus said, okay? Again, you've heard it said, up to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you've sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it's the throne of God, or by the earth, for it's his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it's the city of the great king. And don't take an oath by your head, for you can't make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than that comes from evil. That's Matthew 5, 33 through 37. So we're going to unpack this. And I hope that brings a little bit of a shock value to you. And maybe when I was reading that, those words didn't quite register in your head the way they probably did in the first century. But Jesus is once again bringing true meaning to the law by reframing it, right? He's saying, you've heard this say, pay your debt, pay your vows. I'm saying, don't even make a vow. Rather than taking an oath and then living under the obligation of it, Jesus is offering something deeper. Do not take an oath at all. Those are his words. He's asking us to lay down any need to be right. Just forfeit the idea that it all hinges on you. Stop right there. Think about this for a minute. Can you do that? Can you not make a bunch of promises? Especially if the world seems to hinge on you and too many things are going on, you're probably thinking, I can't do that. My life is going to fall apart. We're going to get to you in just a minute. You see, Jesus is inviting us into a freedom. This is the whole thing the gospel does. The gospel is a power to free you from institutional powers by repatriating your personal power, giving you back your personal power where it should always have been, but you have abdicated. You gave it away to some institution, and now you're in prison. See, he's always inviting us into freedom, freedom that exists when we don't have performance metrics upon things we can't control. See, when he says here, you cannot make, and he's referring to, you know, one hair on your head, black or white. And of course, nowadays, we certainly can make them any color you want. He used this word called dunamai. And that's where we get our word dynamite or power. So what he's saying is you have no power to change all the outcomes. Like you pridefully assume, just like I do, that we can just influence everything and make it all work out. So we overcommit. We overpromise. And he's saying, just let your yes be yes. Just yes or no. Just simple yes or no. You don't have to go and, you know, make all these elaborate promises, all these vows. Now, you might be hearing this and thinking, well, that doesn't sound right. That doesn't sound like, it seems like the most honorable thing you can do is make a vow and stick to it. So how is this lining up with your framework right now? You see, Jesus' primary message here, the bend of his message, is toward making sacred oaths to God. So when Jesus says, do not take an oath at all, it's really subversive to the religious status quo. He's basically saying, I know your religion wants you to make a bunch of vows. Don't take any of them. He's revealing that the oath is not necessary from God's standpoint. It may be necessary from your religion standpoint. It might be necessary from the institutional powers to have you take an oath. It might make them feel good if you can do so. But he's saying, just don't, it's not even worth it. It's not necessary. Oaths are man-made scorecards that are used to distract and overinflate ourselves. I mean, if we avoid the oath, we avoid all the one-upsmanship that comes along with it. We avoid all the obligation. It's a much freer existence. So my question then to you is, do you have institutions or systems or families that are always evaluating you or your commitment to them? I used to work at this church. They actually wanted us to sign an oath of a commitment and loyalty to the pastor and to the church every year. So you can imagine when I didn't sign mine, I got fired. And I did. But think about that. Do you have institutions? Maybe it's your workplace. Maybe it's something else. They're all asking you to sign an oath. Well, maybe you're a military person. Maybe you're a doctor and you have the Hippocratic Oath. These are all fine in their place. You see, but what happens if you don't take the oath? What happens if you don't take the oath? This is the question that really explodes this whole thing. This is how I got on these rails when I was preparing this. I had it written in a completely different direction, and now I got to this kind of evaluation of these texts, and I'm thinking, is that what he's saying? What happens if you don't? What unravels in your life if you don't? See, the wisdom here really liberates us into truth. It liberates us into integrity. It liberates us into authenticity if we have the eyes to see it. Now, what he's saying is we lack power for most of our outcomes. And we can offer a simple yes or no, which is as far as we can see. And that's acceptable. Yes and no are responses. Yes and no are not plans. Yes and no are fair evaluations of our present bandwidth in life. So if you have a lot of young children at home and you've got a lot going on, you need to say no. You need to not take an oath. See, not taking an oath is really Jesus' way of saying, hey, say no sometimes. See, yes and no are the extent of our commitments. And this is where Jesus' words get really, really interesting. If you notice at the end, he says, anything more than yes or no comes from evil. Now, the Greek utilizes a definite article there, and a definite article is the, right? It's rendering it the evil one. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. Some translations actually translate it that way. So when people argue if there is a real devil or a real Satan, a hoofed being with a pitchfork and horns and all that, a real evil being that lurks around trying to destroy your life. I find this passage really dispels kind of all the years of rock album art. And it really reveals that the enemy of the soul is our own cardia, the mindset. This is what he's saying. Yeah, anything that comes beyond that, any desire to go beyond your yes or no, any puffing up comes from the evil one, right? The cardia. Evil is that part of us that is ever promising. It's always saying one day this, one day that, one day this, one day that. It's the climber, the pursuer, right? It's that that I'm going to make a name for myself part of us. And all along, you thought this was goodness. Turns out it's idolatry. That's the heart of this message. It's sobering. I use that word every week, and I love it. It should be sobering. It's because what I'm trying to do is help us wake up. This is really hard to understand right now, but it's going to come into focus in the coming weeks when we examine retaliation and we look at our enemies. You see, the enemy is not the one to which we desire retaliation. It is the one, it's that part of our out-of-tune soul with which we must first contend. See, in the same way we will have to surrender our desire to get even later, when it comes to oath-taking and commitments, we have to surrender the outcomes of not over-committing. So remember, we are instructed to live from a simple yes or no with no embellishments. That's the challenge. That's where Jesus says wisdom, freedom, liberation. Your best life is going to come from not taking an oath. There are many of you who feel saying no is somehow wrong. This is really speaking liberty into your life. See, when I began deconstructing my life, I realized that I had way too many commitments, and most of them involved the church and were linked to my faith somehow. My fundamentalist kind of mindset, my cardia, right? My malware script inside was telling me that it made me feel like if I was busier, if I was doing more, especially at the church, if I was scoring points for Jesus, then all my labors were in vain. And to say no meant that I was saying no to God somehow. And churches love to pressurize their congregation this way to get them to do more. And I understand that. I mean, most people that came to church didn't do very much. So you're trying to get them to do something somehow. I understand it. But folks, you're not saying yes to God just because your church asks you to do something. See, I became a yes man. And as a result, I became an imprisoned man. And so how was I to preach a gospel of freedom from a life that looks like a jail? You ever think about that? How busy pastors and their staff are, and they work tirelessly, endless hours, just constantly, constantly laying it down. And then they're trying to preach freedom to people who are looking at us saying, your life is not free. It's kind of like when the door-to-door Jehovah's Witnesses come by on a Saturday or a Sunday, or, you know, they're all dressed in a suit and they want to come and talk to you in the heat of the morning or whatever. And it's like, really? You're trying to convert me so that I can put on a suit on Saturday morning and come walk around and knock on strangers' doors and do this with you? That's not selling it. See, when I started saying no, I wasn't prepared for the pushback. I'm guessing that you won't be either. See, no, I'm not going to lead any more classes. I'm not teaching any more Bible studies. No, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm actually going to step down from serving as an elder. Nope. No, I'm not going to be coming every single week anymore. I'm going to start, you know, spending time enjoying my weekends. I live in Colorado and I want to be in the mountains. I'm going to do more skiing. I'm going to do more biking. I'm going to get out. Nope, I'm not going to be giving all of my charitable giving here at the church any longer. I'm going to start giving it to the people in my life that have need. You see, all of a sudden, when I started saying no, especially to church things, religious things, deconstructing this, no was viewed as a sin. Other pastors, people I worked with, would resent me about how I could just step away from all this obligation, you know, and how I could just liberate my life. But that's exactly what happened. And guess what? You can do it too. You can liberate your life. And it doesn't mean God is going to get mad at you or withhold his blessing. And I heard all the threats. Oh, boy, if you don't show up here, you're not going to have the tailwind that God has given you. Let me give you some news. Ever since I left the church, I've got nothing but more tailwind. So maybe that's going to encourage some of you. I don't know. Folks, there is no imaginary shoe that's going to drop when you start to liberate your life, when you start to say no, when you start to take back your life. All that will happen is your life will have bandwidth for you to go deeper as all the distractions start to fade away. Now, while we lack the power to change what we think is the big thing, we can respond to the big thing right now. That's what the yes or no means. Right now, respond to the present moment. That's the only place God exists. There's no future God. There's no past God. There's only God. And that ultimately changes everything. See, avoiding the oath creates an immediate pivot point in your life. You may not realize this, but next time you're faced with avoiding it, taking an oath or making a promise or making a commitment, just don't do it. Just don't do it. And it creates an immediate pivot point. Because without the oath, you cannot run alongside with everyone who takes the oath, who pledges. And your ego is going to feel like it's missing out. You're going to feel like, well, God, if I want to keep up with the Joneses, if I want to get the same opportunities there, I got to do this too. You see, you will become marginalized, most likely. You'll be viewed as unprofitable, a dissident. And when this happens, you need to ask yourself, who is judging me so severely? Immediately, you're going to see that it's institutional power. Yeah, institutional power is going to make a power play against you for not vowing to it. It's going to give you a guilt trip, a pity party, and it's all designed to rope you in deeper than your yes or no can take you. This is what Jesus means when he says, anything beyond yes or no comes from the evil one. Right? Because remember the temptations of Jesus, and I have to add this in a lot because this is why I'm always speaking about institutional power. One of the temptations was Satan took him and showed him all the kingdoms of the world. He said, they'll be yours if you bow down. Jesus said, no thanks, but institutional power is Satan's to give. And so this is where I put these pieces together. So avoiding the oath may cause the institutional power to press against you, but it's powerfully liberating because you realize that avoiding the oath means it's impossible for you to over-identify with the system. If you take the oath, you become the thing that it wants you to be. Not taking the oath frees you to remain identified or named by God. This is really living as your true self. So let's take a little test here, a little quiz. How far can we take this idea? Is buying something on credit taking an oath? What about culturally important oaths such as marriage or swearing in a judge or an officer or a doctor? What about the oath in the courtroom when somebody comes in, they put a Bible under your hand, you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth? Is Jesus saying do not take an oath at all? Is he saying not to do any of that? I think wisdom really requires us to be careful and not run too far with this, okay? The main thrust here is our ability to surrender the consequences of not being identified or defined or indexed by our oaths. See, you are not the oaths you take. That's not who you are. That's simply an oath you took. If we've taken an oath, then be sure that we have to and are expected to uphold it to the best of our ability. An oath to the military is a signing away of your freedom for the larger organization. An oath to a spouse is the signing away of your freedom to another person. An oath to purchase goods or services is a signing away of your freedom financially. Oaths are not bad. They have a place in our world. But we must know that our oaths consign our lives and limit our freedoms. We trade our identity and life for the identity and life offered by the institution to which we take an oath. Do you see this exchange? So when you take an oath, you're swearing allegiance to an institutional power, right? This is the part that comes where Jesus says any more than yes or no comes from the evil. So if you can't run into the institutional power, into the depth that you ultimately want, if you can't gain the power that it wants to bestow on you, if you can't be identified by it without taking the oath to go deep enough, then it tells you exactly who that is. This is why Jesus counsels to be sober-minded about it, as he subverts convention by suggesting we just don't do it. See, oaths turn into obligations and duties, and they come from a motivation other than love. Love never obligates us. And I know some of you hate it when I say this. Oh, I have love and I have a person I have to take care of. It's a heck of an obligation. Yep, I get it. I hear you. Love is higher and more powerful motivator than any oath. Can I invite you to consider the teaching today? Look over your obligations and ask if they are worth it. Maybe you are a yes person and need to learn to say no. If life is all have-tos, then you may be over-identified with too many institutions. You don't know who you are, right? The reason you feel pain about the things you have to do is because you don't really want to do them. You're stuck in an obligation. You're not operating from a motive of love. You are living on the motive of duty. Do you feel powerless to do something about your obligations? Listen to this. Do you feel powerless? If so, each oath you have taken is an oath where you've given away your power and your freedom. So, what if you don't want to do it? What if you don't do it? What if you don't hold it all together, right? This is Jesus' point. This is why I read the passage. You can't hold it all together. You have no dunamai. You have no power. You can't make a hair black or white. You can't hold it all together. Who do you think you are? What are you really afraid of losing? A job? You're afraid of losing a low-level relationship? A dwelling place? A toy? Status? Position? Any of those things have anything to do with your ego? See, Jesus said if we could gain the whole world, but we can forfeit our true self, our soul. Yeah, you can gain the whole world by making oaths, but you'll lose all of your freedom and your soul in the process. Maybe he's pointing to a freedom that we all know is real but are too afraid to possess. Why not just offer a simple yes or no? Yeah, I'll do that. Nope, I won't do that. And be okay saying, no, I won't do that. You're not mean. Why not learn to let love set our agenda? Why not learn to let love compel us into action? How about no action, no commitment, no obligation? This is a completely alternative way of living. You simply are moved by love and compassion into action. No oath. No institution, no framework, pure freedom. It's just love doing what love does when it works on the heart. Remember, refusing the oath creates an immediate pivot point. Maybe it's time for you to experience that pivot point. If you're seeing this, well, then welcome to freedom. Welcome to the freedom of the exile, because that's where you're headed. Welcome to true freedom, though, and welcome to seeing beyond everything.